up, everybody? You're listening to NoCo Cinema here on WGN Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. I am Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And we're super psyched to be back with you for another week of Chicago Film Conversation. Connor, it's been a week.
I know.
Well, we had so much goddamn fun last
time. What's a week?
You know? What's a week?
What's in a week? A Tuesday. My birthday was last week.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Woo! We forgot.
That's, you know, some weeks, one of every year.
1 week out of 52.
Yeah.
Yeah, 52 weeks. it was Connor's birthday. What'd you get up to?
I went to Parsons and I had some chicken, and went to Best Intentions and I had some beer, and then I went home and I watched a movie, which was not very good, but we'll discuss that
in
a bit.
That later, but in case, you know,
I liked it. I'll say that
in case someone hasn't said it to you, or you know, I don't think I ever gave you a formal birthday.
Well, let me hear it.
Happy birthday, Connor.
Thanks, babe.
Yeah. Lots to talk about this week. I want to start off by, you know, we like to keep up with the people that we've talked to on the show, even if they can't physically be here to talk about what they're up to recently. But you may remember a filmmaker by the name of Emily Esperanza. She, you know, Chicago filmmaker, but now she's in L.A. and she's doing a lot of great stuff. You remember we talked a little bit about her film Make Out Party, which was so much fun. What a piece.
Went to the world premiere.
Yes.
It was amazing time.
Yeah.
Saw so many great performers, and it was all put together by her and the producer, Eve Rydberg.
Yeah.
Wonderful
Fantastic
time.
Fantastic job. You took some great pictures that you can see on our Instagram at NoCo Cinema. So there's still so much fun to go back and look at because it just seemed like such a great time. But she's, you know, chugging along, doing her thing, and she's actually been, you know, making some headlines. Recently, she just got a 2-page feature in July's issue of American Art Collector, and that's in print only. So if you want to see it, I think you can get it online if you subscribe. So definitely, you know, maybe throw in a little subscription to American Art Collector if that's your thing. But she got a full 2-pager in that magazine, as well as last month, if you didn't see it, she got a nice piece in Real Chicago.
Did a great interview with them.
Yeah.
Talked so a lot about fun. What it's like being a person of color in the film industry.
Yeah, being a woman in the film industry. Everything that we, you know, we touched on with her, but it's always good to keep up with her and see what she's talking about now, see what she's doing.
And just to see how, you know, just see her kicking ass out there, you know.
Oh, yeah, nice she's killing it. So, Emily, from us here at NoCo Cinema, so happy to see you doing so well. And we hopefully, you know, we'll talk to you again soon once you're famous as shit.
Talk to you soon.
Yeah. Don't forget us.
Okay.
Oh, shit. Oh, no.
Tom, pull it together,
sorry,
man.
Sorry.
We've still got to talk Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah. Super important. So, you know, this is so funny. It's not funny, but it's odd that in one of the earliest episodes of this show, we talked about Scarlett Johansson playing the title role, not title role, playing the lead role in the film Ghost in the Shell,
right,
which was a huge controversy at the time.
And understandably so.
Absolutely. It was a big issue that she is a white woman playing a traditionally, or what we understand to be an Asian character, a
right.
Japanese character. And, you know, for fans of Ghost in the Shell, it's an anime written in Japan. And they brought in ScarJo to do this. It was directed by a white guy, and it was a big problem. And she went through with it, obviously.
Right.
You know, the movie came out, didn't do super well.
Nope. I never saw it.
I ended up seeing it for I got a free red box. So I was like, I'll watch this. Wasn't super impressed.
Yeah.
You know, as a film, it's fine, but the issues surrounding it, I was just like, wow, this could have been done a lot better. And I feel bad that, because I like Scarlett Johansson as an actress.
Yeah, so do I.
And she's great. And it saddened me that she would go through with the decision regardless of this sort of backlash. And it just came off as very ignorant, really. Maybe, I mean, by the time the backlash came to a full head, maybe it was too late. You know,
and I don't,
deep into it.
I don't remember if she ever made an official response about the Ghost in the Shell backlash.
No,
I don't remember it. But she has been sort of thrown into this gauntlet again recently, if you've been paying attention.
Yeah.
She was cast as a transgender man in the film Rub and Tug.
Yes. So the story of that film is a transgender man, Dante Tex Gill, who operated a massage parlor and prostitution business in Pittsburgh in the 70s and 80s. So I think that's a super interesting story. Love to see a film about that.
Right.
However, the team, the pair up of ScarJo
and the same director same from Ghost in the Shell.
Exactly. Came together to do this film. And it's just like, how many times is history going to repeat itself? It was kind of silly that she would go, you know, even think about entertaining this. She is essentially coming off this movie that had a lot of bad press around it.
A lot of problems with it as well, yeah.
Yeah, and decided to basically put herself through it again, except for this time, she decided to finally do the right thing. Yeah. According to The Hollywood Reporter, she has exited the film Rub and Tug. She is no longer going to be part of it. In terms of the film actually getting made at this point, I guess we'll just see. I'd love to see a film get made. However, it just doesn't need to be with ScarJo in the title role.
Right.
It can be with a trans actor in the title role now.
Right. And this is to say, you know, I'm glad that she did decide to step down, but I'm hearing things as though people are sort of applauding her decision to step down.
Yeah.
And let's not forget that she actually did, release a response to the backlash. And she said, why don't you go talk to the representation of Jared Leto and Jeffrey Tambor and a third person who I'm not familiar with. So I'm not.
Yeah,
I don't really understand.
But
the two
high-profile ones being Jeffrey Tambor and Jared Leto, who both won awards for playing transgender people. And
I'm not really sure what her point is with that. Is the thing?
Well, I think what she's here's what I'll say. I think what she's trying to get at with that statement was that
there's precedent.
Why do Jared Leto and Jeffrey Tambor get to win awards for playing trans people when she's basically getting pressured to get kicked off this movie.
Right.
Or to exit this movie, rather. And I think there's definitely, I don't think that's like logically inconsistent. She's like, wait, Jeffrey Tambor won an award. He was seen as, you know, being part of a very progressive movement. Jared Leto
won an Oscar.
For it. So why can't she play this character? My personal feelings on it are that Jeffrey Tambor and Jared Leto didn't need to play those characters. They should have probably had trans people play those characters. That's not to take away from the quality of those performances. I think those things can be mutually exclusive. Like that, those performances are not suddenly complete shit,
right?
Because they weren't, you know, this, because it wasn't done the right way, essentially. However, that's not the road we want to keep going down.
Right.
Eddie Redmayne caught a lot of flack for The Danish Girl.
Oh, yeah. I remember that one.
So I think there is a salient point there as to why are these men, and that's not to say that there wasn't backlash against those casting choices.
Yeah, I do remember hearing that there was concern at the very least, or just outright criticism of particularly Jared Leto's portrayal, and they thought it was like bordering on caricature. They thought it was a disrespectful thing. And let's also remember that trans actors can't, the way that Hollywood is set up, you won't see a trans actor like playing a straight person.
Yeah, it's really sad. Because there's plenty of trans actors out there willing to play the roles, but, you know, through whatever, you know, I don't know what word to put on it in terms of, I don't want to call it a conspiracy, but like, you know, if casting directors are prejudiced against trans people, they're just like, oh, you have to play a man, you're not convincing as a man, all this kind of stuff. Well, you know, that's just sad. But if we're going to be as cynical as possible about it, at least let the, where it's like, okay, we can't have trans people play, you know, the gender that they are, you know, the gender that they feel because they're not passing, which if you ask me is kind of bullshit, but whatever. If we're going to be as cynical as possible, at least let them play the trans roles for fuck's sake.
Right.
Like if you're not going to cast them in cis roles, fine. Whatever. Let's be assholes about it. But you have to at least give them the trans roles, because then you literally have a trans person. Like, it's not that hard. I really don't think it's that hard. There are plenty of trans actors out there that you could put in that role. And hopefully as things go forward with Rub and Tug, that's what we're going to get.
Right.
Although I like that you pointed out that in the Hollywood Reporter, the headline is transgender artists applaud Scarlett Johansson's Rub and Tug exit, which is like that's good. Like it's good that, you know, people are saying that that's good that she's, you know, being like, yes, you should exit. But let's not give someone a gold star for doing the right thing.
Right.
You know, for doing. Yeah. You don't need a gold star.
For giving into their conscience over a multi-million dollar contract.
It's right.
Not, yeah.
Boo hoo. She's in the fucking Avengers. You know, she makes so much money. And again, ScarJo, we like you. We like you a lot. I like a lot of your movies.
Come on the show. Maybe
Come
we'll
on the show,
maybe
ScarJo.
We'll squeeze you in a couple months. Fine.
But, you know, hopefully the lesson she's walking away with is like I should do the right thing. I can do the right thing. I have the power, the privilege and the financial, you know, ability to do the right thing. So,
and we're glad that she did.
We're glad that that she did. Let's get some trans actors in there and let's get this movie made.
All
right. Let's get this movie made the right way. Want to jump over to
a darkness on the horizon.
Yeah, a darkness on the horizon. We are
the
now
end of an era.
The end of an era. Nearly the end of an era.
We are on the precipice.
The last Blockbuster store. There's one Blockbuster store left. Originally, there was a lot of. I mean, people wrote about this a lot.
Listeners, close your eyes and take yourselves back to the halcyon days of your youth.
Yeah.
Remember.
The 80s and 90s, the king of home video.
Remember the smell of Lysol on the wind?
Yeah.
As he walked.
Is that the smell of the video store? A little Lysol.
Yeah.
So the big story is that there is only one Blockbuster store left in America. A lot of people have written about how there were Blockbusters. You know, Blockbuster went bankrupt quite a while ago at this point under, you know, just mounting financial pressure, debts that no honest man could pay. And there were two Blockbuster stores in Alaska that people really liked to write and talk about. And it was, you know, it was really cool. And the reason behind those Blockbusters staying open was by virtue of the fact that Alaska, all, you know, I don't think people really think about how remote most of Alaska is still. It's not like they don't have running water.
Right. But
like,
there are towns with literally a population of two people.
Yeah. It's a very remote, very wild sort of area. So the infrastructure of things like the internet is not super great. It's not like, you know, living in Chicago where you can get gigabit internet for relatively cheap and you can just stream fucking 4K content. So Blockbuster was a huge lifeline to people. This is how they got their entertainment. And the two Blockbusters in Alaska, the two last Blockbuster stores, one in Anchorage and one in Fairbanks, announced that they would officially close this week. And
moment of silence.
Yeah. And so that leaves only one Blockbuster video left in Bend, Oregon. Bend, Oregon is the very last Blockbuster in existence. Now, that's not to say that there aren't video stores left across America and chains as well. You can still go to a Family Video. In fact, I was in a Family Video not long ago in Des Moines, Iowa.
Really?
Yeah. Still going strong. People love the video store, and you've got a lot of small independent ones. I know you recently visited one.
Odd Obsession, yeah, down on Milwaukee in beautiful, beautiful Chicago. And that place is great because you can go in. Not only can you rent movies there, you can buy them for extremely cheap. Great. They have a great selection of, you know, just like the normal movies that you would see scrolling through Netflix, but they also have a bunch of weird cult stuff along the walls and really old movies. And another thing that I really liked about it is they also have independent zines. They have independent comic strips and papers that were made by local artists in Chicago. And you can go in there and they're free to take. You can donate to them if you would like. Odd Obsession is just a great place to either stop into, a great place to support. It's a boon for the independent art scene in Chicago, and it's just a great, you know, it's one of the few remaining places that you can go and really capture that rental film rental experience.
And that's just off the is it the Western Blue Line?
Yes, sir.
Right off the Western Blue Line, 1830 North Milwaukee Avenue. What did you pick up this time? What'd you go for?
I went there and I got a couple of, like I mentioned, I got a couple of comic strips. There were just some, you know, pulp, magazines that I picked up. I bought Casino Royale.
The Bond one?
Yep. Yeah. I bought, yep, Casino Royale. And I also bought, Machete.
Oh my God.
Which is one of my favorite Robert Rodriguez movies.
Really?
Period.
I'm not going to lie to you. I've never actually seen it.
You've never seen Machete?
No, I've only seen, I saw the fake trailer that they made for Grindhouse when they originally did Planet Terror and Death Proof. I saw that. I was like, this is nuts. This is funny. And then when they actually made it, I was like, the absolute madmen. And then they made a sequel, Machete Kills.
Yeah.
And then Lady Machete, Gaga's in it.
And then Machete in Space.
Is that going to happen?
I hope so. Fucking Mel Gibson is in the second one.
I know.
Fucking Robert De Niro is in the first one.
I know. What's Charlie Sheen?
Yep. As the president.
As his birth name, Carlos Estevez. That's his. He's credited in there as Carlos Estevez, which is
really?
His birth name.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah, you know his brother's Emilio Estevez, right?
Charlie Sheen.
Yeah.
No, I did not know
and
that.
Martin Sheen is his last name. That's a stage name. That's like his stage name. His real last name is Estevez.
Wow, I never knew that.
Yeah, yeah.
Teach me more.
But yeah, Odd Obsession, great store, and it's great to know that there's still a store like that out there, especially because you know, not to wax nostalgic too much, but going to the video store was so much fun.
Yeah.
I loved going to the video store. I loved it so much, and I do miss the tactile nature of doing those things. And you know, you can call me a Luddite if you want. I still pay for a ton of streaming services. Streaming is just the way things are going to be,
right?
But it's nice to know that the option exists. And you know, streaming services will come and go based on how popular they are. I mean, there's great stuff out there like Shudder, which collects a lot of cult, a lot of horror, a lot of that sort of thing. But if they ever become financially insolvent, it goes away. So where do you find those movies?
It's the feeling that you get when you go into a library, you know?
Yeah.
You want to pick up a book, or you don't really know what you're looking for necessarily, but you know that you'll find something because you're surrounded by a bunch of great stuff.
And a lot of great people that are super into this. Like, this is what they love. So if you could walk into Odd Obsession and just be like, hey, you know, I really liked, say, The Wailing. I really like The Wailing, but I want to watch other things similar to that.
Right.
Give me some other recommendations, and I guarantee you they will have at least five movies
and they'll
just, need to see it.
And they'll be so much more dead on than any Netflix or Amazon algorithm ever possibly could be.
I fucking hate the algorithm.
I can't remember what it was, but it recommended me like, oh, Gabriel Iglesias's I'm Not Fat, I'm Fluffy because of my interest in The Wailing or something like that. It was like, I couldn't.
Clearly, you like torturing yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you like excruciatingly long things that full of screaming that make you dread going to sleep. Have you seen any of Gabriel Iglesias's stand-up?
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, I mean, that's what happens. You know, you'll go in and I'd watch Sunset Boulevard. It's like, oh, you like Sunset Boulevard? How about American Pie Bandcamp? It's like, what the fuck
what
is
the
dick?
Fuck?
Yeah, no, these people at video stores actually gave you super great recommendations.
And they are going to be, they're not, you know, they're closing down. We had this one that was up in northern Wisconsin, this place we go to all the time, my family, and it had become a drapery store.
Fuck God. Well, it's so sad too. Well, I'm sure with a place like that, you know, Loc du Flambeau, pay your respects. Loc du Flambeau is the kind of place where people have like a lake house, like where it's like you're not there all the time.
Yeah, but so there are, you know, I mean,
there are people
obviously.
There like, yeah, you'll have a community that it lives up there full time, but I'm sure they do, you know, a video store like that would probably bank on people coming up for like a weekend or maybe even a couple weeks. And they would bank on, you know, you get a rainy day, everybody comes in to rent some movies.
Exactly. That's what we use it for. But
or even if you're just like, oh man, you know, don't really want to go out on the lake tonight, just want to hang out, watch a movie, you know, in the house. So it makes me sad because these are real people that run these businesses, and small business is important. And you got to support them. So I would say if you are a listener to the show, odds are you will love Odd Obsession movies. So check it out. 1830 North Milwaukee Avenue, right off the Western Blue Line stop. They've got everything. I mean, you said that they have like new releases, just the general stuff you'd find.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a full section, a full, you know, stack of shelves in the very front as soon as you walk in, full of all of the, like, they had Baby Driver in there and, you know, all of the movies that had just come out on digital.
It's so great.
Yeah. So you'll be able to, you can go in and do it. Support it.
Yeah. Support the local business.
And who knows if there will be a resurgence in it, like there is a resurgence in vinyl, you know?
Yeah. It would be super great. It'd be super great if that were what happened.
As Rudyard Kipling put it, the gods of the copybook headings with terror and slaughter return.
What?
Blockbuster comes back and just destroys Netflix.
That'd be crazy. I'd be curious to see if that were to happen. Like, all of a sudden people get super into like movie rentals.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like, well, I think one of the big problems for the business side of it is not just Netflix, but you have things like Redbox.
Yeah.
Where it's like people are so afraid to talk to human beings right now.
Yeah.
Like it's like a chore. I've talked to some people that are just like, why would I ever go to a movie rental place? Like I would have to talk to someone. And I'm just like,
it's hysterical.
Christ.
Yeah.
And with Redbox, you don't have to do that. You just scroll
through. You just want a vending machine for your movies.
And then also, but they also have the whole one day rental thing. You can rent a movie for $1.50.
Yeah, that is,
you know,
good.
And they don't have to pay employees to keep the store clean, stock it, give recommendations, and that sort of thing. So they're just undercutting it at that point. So you really got to seek it out. But one of the biggest problems is that even if you want to go rent a physical thing, it's so much easier than having to go to the store and like peruse. But I love the perusing, and video stores have a backlog of titles. You're not just limited to what's in the red box.
Right.
You know, say you wanted to catch up on Ant-Man, but they just aren't carrying. I mean, they are, but you know, they're not carrying it in the red box that week. Sorry, tough. And I mean, that's different. I mean, obviously, if you go to a video rental place and they're all out of copies of it, you know, it's the same deal.
Right.
But at least you might be like, well, I can rent something out. Like, you can go watch the classics. You can watch something that you've never seen before. Like, you're just like, you know, I've never seen, I don't know, Midnight Cowboy. Classic. Dustin Hoffman.
Right.
John Voight.
There was a semblance of, like, luck of the draw when you went into a movie store. Like, oh, I really wanted to. I remember when I was a kid one time, I really wanted to see the Alien Scooby-Doo movie,
the animated Alien Invaders or something like that.
Exactly. And I remember I was going through and there was like one copy left and I pulled it up and it was some, you know, it was like some porn parody of Pirates of the Caribbean or whatever. So I didn't rent that. I was a child. Yeah. I did ask my mom what it was and she said it was a film for dirty old men, but I decided not to rent that. But I do remember that what I did pick up, I watched. Watched Jaws for the first time.
So you go in for
I went
Scooby-Doo,
for Scooby-Doo.
You walk out with Jaws.
And I saw Jaws for the first time, and I had a great bonding experience with my mom, who is a fan of Spielberg, obviously, and my father, who loved Jaws. And
yeah.
We bonded over watching
that.
Wow,
look at that. And that's something that's not going to happen a lot. And, you know, again, call it nostalgia, call it whatever the fuck you want. I understand that there's business things that get in the way of it.
Right.
But you can't deny that those moments were formative for a lot of people, whether they're huge film nerds or not. Things like that were really important. But it also, you know, at the same time, I remember me and my brother, like every week for like three or four weeks, we just rented Too Fast, Too Furious. And just watch it for like what every reason? Because it's fucking awesome. Oh. That's why. Are you kidding me?
I thought maybe it was
Ejectocito, cuz.
Like, I thought maybe it was like some devious plot just so that other people couldn't watch
Too Fast, Too Furious. No, we rented it like every week for 3 or 4 weeks, and we just watched it like constantly. We loved Too Fast, Too Furious because we thought it was like the coolest movie ever made because we were like, I don't know, 10, 11 years old. You know, that shit was rad when you were 11.
It is fucking badass. I'll say
that. Super badass. So hopefully, you know, you guys are still interested in renting those kinds of things. I know things are winding down on a lot of physical media, but not for me, if you ask me.
I did ask you.
Yeah. Thanks. Thank you.
I'm asking you.
Now?
Yeah.
In this moment?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I want to jump into, on that note, I want to jump into the Criterion Collection, because when I first found out about the Criterion Collection, I think that's what really re-inspired my obsession with physical media. I was already buying tons, you know, I still, you know, DVD was brand new when we were young. I remember the rise of DVD happened within our adolescence, and that was the format. And then I was super about collecting DVDs because that's how you watched movies, and I wanted to watch all my movies, and I've always been a little bit like that. But the Criterion Collection really upped the fucking game for me. In terms of, I was like, wow, I can watch these movies that maybe I've never seen before, but I get enticed by it because the art and like the assumption that if it's in the Criterion Collection, it's worth watching.
Now, Tom, how did you find out about the Criterion Collection for people who might be interested in starting their own collection?
So I found out through Barnes & Noble. I happened to go into a Barnes & Noble one day with my girlfriend, and we just walked into the movie section. I don't really care. They're a corporate entity. I don't give a shit. I typically almost never buy movies at Barnes & Noble because the markup on that shit is insane. It is not even funny how much a DVD or a Blu-ray costs at Barnes & Noble. I'm just like, I think I even asked one of the people who worked there. I was just like, obviously you have no control over this. I was just like, what? How do you expect people to pay like $35 or something so ridiculous for a DVD here or a Blu-ray here when they can go to Best Buy and probably get it for at least $15 cheaper? And they just kind of shrug. They're just like, we don't really, because it's not our main moneymaker.
Right.
So they just mark up the DVDs a ton. And I was just like, okay, whatever. See you later. I'm going to Best Buy. But Barnes & Noble, twice a year, they have this huge Criterion Collection sale, 50% off of these Criterions, which typically retail at about $40 a pop. Now, the reason they retail at that much is because they are full of like exclusive supplements. A lot of these movies can't be purchased in this format anywhere else. A lot of them have been meticulously restored by the Criterion Collection. And so you're really paying a high premium. And a lot of places don't sell Criterion movies. Like Barnes & Noble is one of the few stores I've ever walked into that actively sells Criterion. Them, Amazon, and believe it or not, fucking Costco.
Really?
You can get Criterions for half off at Costco. It's a very limited selection.
You can get a whole palette of restored Good, Bad, and the Ugly.
You can get
300 copies for $10.
You can get, seriously, you can get like these, you know, classics of cinema for like $20 at Costco. It's like the Criterion sale all year, but their selection is super limited to what they have. But twice a year I go into Barnes & Noble and I just build out that Criterion Collection. Which I guess will lead us now into what have we been watching recently.
Yeah, did you pick something up recently from Criterion?
Yeah, I got a lot of movies this time. Some I've seen, some I haven't seen.
Oh, boy.
Out of the ones that I've seen, I picked up The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, which nice. I think is a super underrated movie.
Is it?
Yeah, no, seriously. If you look up, I will pull up the Rotten Tomato meter right now. Wes Anderson was riding pretty high by the time The Life Aquatic came out.
Because he had done Moonrise Kingdom prior to that, right?
No, this is way before Moonrise Kingdom.
Really?
This is like 2004.
Oh.
This is, yeah.
What had he done before before that.
He had done...
Holy shit, Kevin Spacey was in A Bug's Life?
Okay.
I'm sorry.
So this is way before... This is after the Royal Tenenbaums. This is after Rushmore.
Okay, Royal Tenenbaums.
Royal Tenenbaums had been the one that he had just done. And Royal Tenenbaums was super well received. And a lot of people really did not like this. It's really not a terrible tomato meter rating, and I'm not super heavy on the tomato meter. It's skewed and all that kind of stuff, but it gives us at least a dipstick test.
Yeah,
gives
exactly.
us a nice little test,
something to orient ourselves.
Right. So it's sitting at only about a 56%, which is not fantastic. And the based on Rotten Tomatoes, the critic consensus was that The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou is soaked by many critics who call it smug, ironic, and artificial. And I can understand that. And that's a common criticism, I think, of Wes Anderson in general,
right.
is that it's very quirk. It's very, like...
Very on the nose about how he has his own style.
Yeah. I mean, you cannot watch any Wes Anderson movie without being very aware of the form that he's working with. He's very particular. He's very, like, you know, artifice heavy.
Right.
But this one in particular has a lot of kind of that early 2000s indie quirk to it. There's a whole section that's like a tiny little model of the ship, and it's like all meticulously handmade and everything,
yeah.
and everybody's walking through it, and it's like very clearly the artifice of it all. Very, it's like this might be the most Wes Anderson movie ever made, if by certain standards of aesthetic.
Yeah.
But I personally love it. I think it's my favorite by Wes Anderson for
really?
A litany of reasons. And it's actually his lowest rated. Probably his worst reviewed, because it's that on Tomato Meter, on the Rotten Tomatoes, it's 56%. For comparison, Tenenbaums is 80, Rushmore is 89, Fantastic Mr. Fox, 93, Darjeeling Limited, only a little bit higher than that at 69%. Grand Budapest was a huge one for him. Even Isle of Dogs and Moonrise Kingdom all hit in those 90s. So it's kind of weird. It's kind of an anomaly. I really like it. I think it's great. I was happy to pick it up.
And I think that a lot of people are like that with that movie. I think that
yeah.
the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes, it's 56% for critics, but it's in the 80s for
yeah.
audience score.
I think a lot of people really love... Yeah. I think it's Bill Murray's best performance in a Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah.
I love it. I think it's fantastic.
It's really focused on him, which is nice to see, too.
Yeah. It's super funny, too.
Yeah.
It's so funny. It's so ironic and so good. I also picked up Mulholland Drive.
Fuck yeah.
David Lynch. Oh, arguably his magnum opus. Arguably, you know, the BBC did a ranking of the greatest films of the 21st century thus far, and it was number one.
Mulholland Drive was
Mulholland
number one.
Number one.
I hate those lists because it's sometimes...
But it gives you an interesting perspective.
It is. Exactly. I can't really argue with that. It's such a weird thing to argue with. Mm-hmm. How do you argue like something else above Mulholland Drive?
Yeah, because it's like, why even compare anything to Mulholland Drive? It's so
right.
of itself.
Yeah.
It's very David Lynch, but it's also spectacular. And I'm a man who's a very big fan of David Lynch's work. I like a lot of his stuff, even when it's at its most difficult. And Mulholland Drive is just 2.5 hours of total mindfuck, and it's really great. So I had to pick that one up. The Before trilogy box set, Richard Linklater's Odyssey of Love.
Right, right.
Really happy to get that one.
Did you get that one on a recommendation from Gabe Klinger by any chance? Because I remember
I did. Yeah, I mean, and I'd seen the first one, Before Sunset. And I know, and I noticed when I remember when we talked to him, went with his film Porto, there were shades of
yeah.
of the Before trilogy in that.
Absolutely.
A different kind of way, but definitely shades of that Linklater, you know, watching a relationship unfold as opposed to having a plot. Because if there's one thing you can definitely say about the Before trilogy is that there is virtually no plot. It's not about anything. It's not like there's no plot, but it's about a lot of things. And it's one of the most naturalistic expressions of romance I've really ever seen, or how a relationship progresses. So if you haven't seen the Before trilogy and you really want to pick something up from this Criterion sale, it's typically like $100 to get for $50. And it's this beautiful, maybe even less. It might even be less.
And if you're a fan of collecting something and you know what that feels like, or you have always been interested in starting a collection,
doing Criterions is definitely a good, it's good, like, route. A weird hobby. And the last one I want to throw in, and this is where I've been watching a lot of films from, is I picked up the America Lost and Found, the BBS story. It's a box set of seven films, all from the the pretty well-known production house BBS that started, you know, at the birth of the new Hollywood movement at the end of the 60s, beginning of the 70s, and produced some of its most important works. You've got the Monkees film Head, which is trippy as shit. It's so crazy.
Never seen that.
Oh, yeah. If you know, we're talking about the Monkees, like the first constructed boy band.
Yep.
And they made this totally batshit crazy movie to compete with the Beatles and all that kind of stuff, their film presence. Easy Rider. That was, you know, fantastic movie. Five Easy Pieces. The Last Picture Show by Peter Bogdanovich. Some of the hallmarks of the new Hollywood movement. And in particular, one I watched the other day that I found that is very much a lesser known work from not just BBS, but of the new Hollywood movement, is called Drive, He Said. Directorial debut of Jack Nicholson.
Really?
Yeah. And it's a really interesting movie about Vietnam, sexual freedom, and college basketball.
What a wonderful intersection.
Yeah. It can be a confusing movie at times. It's like, it's very loose in a lot of ways. But I think it's really great. And it's a really interesting picture of campus culture at the time. It's a really interesting picture of, like, sexual liberation and what people might have been starting to realize about sexual liberation in terms of, hey, it's great to be sexually liberated, but you have to be careful, because there are consequences to your actions and that sort of thing. So I found that to be a really great movie, just directed by Jack Nicholson. It's so odd.
I was thinking about that the other day. I was like, Jack Nicholson strikes me as the kind of guy that's directed movies, but I don't know what movies.
Yeah.
I didn't know if he had. So.
It was kind of lost to time a little bit, and thanks to the Criterion Collection, it came back. So, I feel like this now sounds like an ad for the Criterion Collection. Well, I promise you, it is not sponsored. I just really like the Criterion Collection, and it gives you access to a lot of films that you might not ever have seen otherwise. A lot of blind buys in my Criterion purchasing that I'm just like, fuck, I'll buy this and see how it goes. And if not, I'll either keep it just as an interesting sort of thing, maybe revisit it later, or I'll give it to someone else as a gift.
Perhaps me. For my birthday.
We'll see.
I will buy it. I will buy some of your movies from you, Tom.
Oh, yeah.
Someday.
We'll see. What have you watched recently, Connor?
Well, so this movie probably won't be getting the Criterion treatment.
We don't know that.
We don't know that, but I'm going to go ahead and... This is a Connor pick. I'm going to say Tao on Netflix.
What?
We'll probably not get the Criterion treatment.
Yeah, I got the recommendation from that. There's like, oh, you really liked that movie Cube. You should watch Tao. I'm like, oh, maybe.
Did you really like the movie Cube?
I didn't really like it. I did think it was interesting. Yeah. But I wasn't like, wow, this is great. I was like, I was entertained for 90 minutes.
Yeah, it does seem like a movie where the premise kind of outweighs everything else.
It was weird because it was like Saw before Saw.
Yeah.
In a way.
And Tao, conversely, is sort of like Ex Machina and 2001 after those movies. And not really approaching...
I got that vibe from it.
Yeah, not really approaching that...
level of quality.
Exactly, that level of quality. But it's interesting to... On paper, it's great. It's got Micah Monroe, Ed Skrein, and fucking Gary Oldman turning in a performance as a like a sentient AI that controls this madman genius's who's also like a psychopath. He controls his house, basically.
Yeah, and like, I thought I recognized the voice. I was just like, that sounds strikingly like Gary Oldman.
It is strikingly is Gary Oldman.
Believe it or not. He did a Netflix movie. What do you know?
Yeah. And there are some moments in it where it's pretty touching, but overall, the premise is a woman gets kidnapped by this guy who's trying to finish an AI that's going to change the world, and he like puts a chip into her brain that's constantly uploading data, like her memories and her like thoughts or something, into a being translated into an algorithm, which is creating this like super AI. And she meets Tao, who is the AI that controls the guy's house. And she slowly starts teaching Tao about what it means, excuse me, to be a person and what it means to exist, and eventually helps Tao empathize with her so that Tao starts to realize that he is keeping her captive at the behest of this fucking psychopath played by Ed Skrein. So on paper, it's great. In execution, it falls flat, but I enjoyed parts of it. I thought it was a sweet, thrilling movie at the very beginning.
And at least it's, you know, some original content from Netflix, which is, you know, it can be hit or miss.
Yeah.
But they're doing what they're doing. They're trying to change the way that movies happen.
Yeah.
You know, and that sort of thing. So, you know, I guarantee you, like, a big Hollywood studio probably would not have distributed that.
That was what I was talking about with my roommates after I watched it. It's like, I'm glad that Netflix is picking up scripts that Hollywood otherwise would never pick up. And I'm glad that, you know, it probably makes the person that created that, makes them feel good that it's out there. And they got somebody as big as Gary Oldman to be in their movie.
Yeah, absolutely. It reminds me a little bit of when I watched this movie called The Ritual, which was only theatrically released in the UK, I think.
It's got one of the Andes from Hot Fuzz in
it. Yeah, Rafe Spall.
I watched that too. I liked it.
I liked that quite a bit. I was like, wow, this is really great. But again, like, you can't get these fucking audiences into seats anymore with anything original. It's so weird. It's so weird. Like, nothing is enough for anybody if it's not a fucking Marvel movie.
Right.
And that's not to say that I hate the Marvel movies or, like, I'd hate popular film. But, you know, it's just something to observe. Like, how do you get butts into seats? And, I mean, some movies really accomplished it. Like, A Quiet Place.
Right.
Shocking
but
how well that
you
did.
Need some huge pedigree behind you if you're a filmmaker in order to put out something original and expect to get that big, you know, big box office success. Like, you'd have to be like an Edgar Wright or a John Krasinski in A Quiet Place.
It certainly didn't hurt that John Krasinski and Emily Blunt both starred in the film. I think they did pretty good on the marketing too, and plus the concept is terrifying.
Yeah.
And then you have something like Hereditary, which was pretty great at the box office. Not too bad at the box office at all. But I think that came from the, again, you said pedigree. A24 distributed it. So both people who are movie fans and people who are kind of like scratching at becoming the movie fan thing. No A24. Especially, they know what that logo means.
Exactly what I was going to say. People are starting to recognize that white, black and white logo.
Yeah. And it's very interesting. So, again, I'm glad that Netflix is making the original stuff that we at least can entertain ourselves, and they can give some inexperienced filmmakers a chance.
Yeah.
I really like that.
That said, Tao falls flat.
Yeah.
3 stars.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us this week on No Coast Cinema. Covered a lot of stuff today. We'll be putting some links to the different articles that we talked about into our posts and the podcast and everything like that. Next week, we are going to be talking with New Trash. They are a kind of a video art collective.
Yeah, and I'm fucking psyched.
Yeah, they are fantastic. They've made some of the most strikingly original music videos I've seen anywhere.
Yeah.
Really great stuff. So we're excited to expand our horizons from not just cinema to the art of filmmaking as a music video. Because music videos, I know a lot of music videos growing up, I watch them, I'm like, I feel like I'm watching a film.
Right.
A lot of directors who are huge now, started out in music videos. David Fincher being probably the most prolific, if you ask me, in terms of he was making music videos for fucking Madonna.
Right.
He did all that shit and changed the game. So we're going to be talking music videos and art and all that kind of stuff with New Trash next week. Until then, you are listening to NoCo Cinema here on WGM Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. I am Tom Hush.
And I am Connor Cornelius.
And we'll see you next week.